Hello and welcome to Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. My name is Victor Sosa, joined as always by the legend Les Thatcher. Les, a very interesting week. I suspect we will end up spending the majority of this time together today talking about Dynamite and what happened as a result of what went on that particular show. It was another big week from a ratings perspective for AEW. Fifth week in a row up over a million, although it was down from last week. And if you look at those 5 weeks, this was smack dab in the middle. Basically, this past Wednesday ranks third in terms of audience. Now, before we get into some of the stuff here that you and I have discussed for topics today, do you make anything out of the idea that there was a better number during the semifinals last week than the actual title tournament to decide who's the new AEW champion?
Maybe and then maybe not. That's a hard thing to say. I know over the years, you'll book something and say, man, this is going to draw big, and it doesn't. Or you book something that you think, well, this is something to fill the time. We don't expect to draw with it, and it'll blow your mind, and you will draw. Sometimes it's about something else going on in the world. But I don't necessarily I wouldn't live or die on that or hang my hat on it. Of course, yeah, once you get over a million, you want to keep climbing. But this, in the wrestling business promotion, it's like going to Vegas and playing the roulette wheels or the slot machine. It's a gamble, what you think is going to work and what it seems it might, you might have been following your audience for a while and you think, yeah, well, they all seem to be leaning in this direction. And then just when you think you've got them figured out and then I've made it. And the numbers go down. So, it's at best a crapshoot. So as a promoter or a booker, I would like to think that's the best, it's going to keep climbing. But with the history and everything, it's not necessarily, But again, then I wouldn't say, well, it was a bad show. Because honestly, I think this was a pretty damn solid show, top to bottom. I mean, we're going to come across... We're going to talk about the positives. We're also going to talk about the negatives, right?
Absolutely. I've got a laundry list. And I'm so glad you actually said that before we got started into this list of topics today, because I was thinking it as you said it. The idea that you may hear a lot of, they should have done this, why didn't they do that, and think that we hated the show. Not at all. This was a very good program.
Yes, it was. But you know what? That's, please, for some of the new listeners Spotify and Amazon and so forth and so on, or Apple, excuse me. After all the years I've been in this business and of all the hats I've worn, I'm picky. And I think that's a good thing too. You can just do things half-assed and say, okay, well, they'll buy it or they won't, we'll move on. But that's not actually the way to put your business together. So yeah, they had some good things, and then there's some things we're going to question.
So let's start with some of these questions that I have and have been mulling over in the last day or two, and we'll start with the main event. Congratulations to Jon Moxley, once again the AEW champion with a victory over Bryan Danielson. Obviously, I would love your take on the match itself, but there's a couple of other things I'd like to get into first and get your opinion on before we talk about the actual match. Moxley's obviously been on a tremendous run since he's come back to AEW, and even more so since he's gotten the opportunity to get back into the title mix and everything that's gone down with CM Punk and now this title tournament and the match this past week with Bryan Danielson. So I've been sitting here thinking about this for the last day or so, and as good as he has been, and he has been, was he the right choice this past week? And here's the reason I'm asking. Let me look at it another way. Should Bryan Danielson have lost here? And is he losing too much? Now, to that end, I actually jumped on the AEW website to take a look at their win-loss records. Do you remember those? We were once told that these things were going to matter. And so
that was how many centuries ago that Tony Khan mentioned that wins and losses are going to be important. They're going to matter in our company. You're about to tell us they don't, right?
Yes and no. I mean, I hesitate to bring these up because they don't mean what we hope they would. But here's my point. Bryan Danielson is 9-4 this year in singles matches, 30-6 overall in AEW. Now, you look at 30-6, there's nothing wrong with a record like that. But Danielson's losses are all pretty high profile. I mean, I can think off the top of my head, Page, Jericho, Moxley here, Moxley twice, as a matter of fact. The match that actually brought the Combat Club together was a Moxley win over Danielson. So right there, I just named you four. And my thing with it is this, in the era where there's not a whole lot of house shows, in fact, in AEW, you can count on one hand the amount of house shows they've run in 3 years. So losses on the road that are only seen by the live crowd, you know, that's a thing of the past. Every time he's lost, it's been on a pay-per-view or on TV where your biggest audiences are. And I feel like that can create the appearance that his deal here is that every time he gets into a big match, he loses. You know, and we all know that he's a really giving guy who honestly doesn't care about wins or losses. He wants to go out there and have the best match he can. I get that. But when Bryan Danielson walks into this company, I would imagine most everybody in the locker room and most everybody watching at home knows that's the best wrestler here. And when everybody understands who the best is, even at some point, if it's just a subconscious thing that you don't even realize or can't put your finger on, people are going to be looking at this eventually like, what is going on here? Like, why am I watching this when everybody knows this guy's the best and he never wins in the big spot? Like, what? Why am I watching this? The best guy should be buzzsawing these people. And since we're talking about records, let me look at Jon Moxley as a comparison. 17-1 in singles matches this year. 30-2 overall, 85-12 all time in AEW. Now, to me, that's a top guy. And when you think about those high profile losses that I referenced, I rattled off four from Danielson. You know, he's lost so infrequently. Honestly, aside from the loss to Punk last week or the week before on pay-per-view, the only loss I can think of the other 11 was the one to Omega for the AEW championship a couple of years ago in January. Like, I can hardly remember a Jon Moxley loss. And to me, Bryan Danielson should be getting similar treatment.
I agree. I totally agree. And you're right. And the fact that Bryan, well, you know, and somebody can say, well, Bryan is such a good worker that him putting some guys over is not going to hurt him. And I would not disagree with that. But I would disagree that with every high profile match that he should raise somebody else's hand. And these numbers tell us that, in terms of wins and losses, they may matter to you, and they may matter to me, and they may even matter to Moxley and Bryan. They don't matter to Tony Khan. Would that be, we got to say they don't matter to him, right?
Well, listen,
they obviously don't.
We can just look at the tag team division, which we'll get to in a few minutes, and tell you that you can throw those things out the window.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. So it two things here, I think. One, they don't. But two, if you're not going to back something up, you say, you know, it's not uncommon in the 62 plus years that I've been playing around with this, that, you know, somebody will say something on an interview or a promo that they forget about as quick as they say it, and then don't back it up or can't back it up, and somebody might call them on it. But when a promoter tells you something, it's not like they're changing their persona day to day, heel, baby face, or, you know, this, that, and the other. So, yeah, they should be like your Uncle John, right? You can go to them with your problems and they're going to help you. You know, they're the stabilizing factor, I guess I should say, in this whole thing. But, and we're going to talk about on this same show inconsistencies that really, you know, consistency, especially in telling stories. Whether they're true stories or lies, there needs to be a consistency, and we'll find out, you know, something I noticed and brought up to your attention we can talk about here in this same show, which is completely two separate ends of the spectrum, you know. But yes, the lack of consistency here. I think Bryan, and it's not so much can he do the job, yes. Is he that talented? Yes. But you're absolutely right. And if you're going to have him drop it, the matches he drops it to the high-profile guys, then let's tell that story. He can't win the big one. As good as he is, he can't win the big one. Which is, you know, that's not an how many quarterbacks in the NFL that people brag about, the Buffalo quarterback, now they're talking about Tua in Miami, and what's the kid's name in with the Chargers. When was the last time any one of the three have won a Super Bowl?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah, you can see the talent, you can believe in the talent, but it's not just necessarily those people that create wins and losses, especially with football. It's got a lot of other people involved. But in wrestling, you can build a, you know, yes, it's pre-arranged. We know who's going to be the winner and who's going to be the loser. But that doesn't mean you can't make a compelling story there. And so if I'm going to be like, you know, if I've got somebody like Vic Sosa checking the wins and losses, I better be able to have an answer as to why they're that way. Or are they at random? Does Tony Khan even have a clue that Moxley is 30-0 this year?
You know.
You think?
Who knows? But, you know, to me, I think one of the reasons I was thinking about Danielson like this, and you point out the angle that they can obviously do about him not winning the big one, which makes sense, and it would be good if they did it. But, you know, to me, there's another layer on that. I know he's the best, so why isn't he the champion, or at least why isn't he winning the way Moxley does? In that, you know, the cat is out of the bag here. We all know that it's entertainment, for lack of a better term, as opposed to the days of the territories where you thought you knew, but you didn't really know, right? You weren't 100%
right.
Sure. Now that the, you know, that part of the, we've been behind the curtain to see that, you know, the fact that he's the best and not being used as the best is all the more glaring, I think, sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Well, you know, let's grab a TV show. Let's grab Law & Order SVU.
Sure.
Right? Marisha Hargitay has been one of the lead actresses on that show for years, since its inception. And she's now, she's a lieutenant, sergeant, whatever it is. She's head of her division. Okay, this week she makes great decisions. Next week she can't make the same decisions. The following week, she's a heel because she goes behind the scenes and does something. The week following that, she becomes a saint. Why am I following this show? There's no consistency to any of that, is there?
No, not at all.
I mean, you use little twists and turns to make change, you know, to get people, I didn't see that coming. But, yeah, it's got to be some consistency. And yes, Danielson is obviously technically probably the most sound performer on that roster at this point in time. And so, yeah, I agree with you. You expect to see this guy with his hand raised most of the time. And with Mox, because of his style or lack thereof, if you want to go with corny on that, it doesn't matter, you know, because he's kind of that rebel, devil may care, you know, it's whatever it takes type of guy anyway. So, yeah, a lot of times you look at the personality that you're dealing with or the characterization of the performer, and you worry about, okay, I need to stay within that, you know, those parameters. And that, of course, has not been the case for a number of years in the industry. But, yeah, did it hurt him to drop the match to Mox? They had a good match. While we're on that match, it was solid. They beat the hell out of one another, which I expected. And more importantly to me was the fact that after Moxley won, that they stood together. Brian held his hand up, and they, you know, basically celebrated together. I would have had I recorded mine cut off before it. I don't know. Did Regal show up down at ringside?
He did. And Brian put the belt on Moxley, much like he did Wheeler Yuta when he won the championship. Or excuse me, Daniel Garcia,
all right, cool,
when he won the championship a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. You know, cool. See, I didn't get to see all that. So good. That's what I would have had done too, because that to me is the my strongest faction in that company. And so I want to be sure that they're, since they don't enter the ring together, they don't, you know, hang around. They have they all don't have their nose up the other guy's rear end, is my point, I guess, like so many of the factions, is that they need these little subtleties to show the bond. Am I making sense, I hope?
Perfect sense.
Yeah, so I'm glad that Regal showed, you know, and that whole thing. So, you know, overall, I think it went well. Where do we go from here? Now, I think Brian needs a strong wind coming back. I mean, I don't know where they're going to, what kind of angle or where they're going to go, who he's going to be with. But he needs, you know, they take a week to build it, but the next major match that he has, he needs to get a good, solid win over somebody, I believe. And damn, if they keep having injuries and guys getting suspended and stuff, Mox could be a 20-time world champion by Christmas, couldn't he?
He may never get to go on vacation.
Absolutely. Oh, wow. Yeah. But, yes, I thought the main event was well done. I don't give stars. But, you know, I don't know it's the greatest match of the day, of the week, of the month, of the year, but it was a damn solid match, and I think it the way they finished it, it came out really well. And so, again, they've strengthened the entire faction with it, and so they, as far as I'm concerned, they're the top faction in the company.
So that's the situation with the Blackpool Combat Club. We had a very newsworthy debut of Saraya, the former Paige in WWE. That's another thing I've spent the last day or so mulling over, Les. And I got a few questions about that, too, which I would like to get to after you let everybody know where they can get themselves some T-shirts and DVDs.
Well, you can get some T-shirts at Pro Wrestling Tees. And if you'd like, you can get a copy of the first ever Pro Wrestling T-shirt on the market. The Briscoe Booster T-shirt put out in 1972 by Jack Jerry and myself. It was the first wrestling T-shirt on the market. And put out, and you can get a copy of that, as I said, at Pro Wrestling Tees. And you also get a T-shirt that says, I'm a Les Thatcher guy, if you happen to be. And I don't even know anybody in my family that is, but that's there. As far as DVDs, Wrestling from the Heartland, the Lost Developmental Tapes, Volumes 1 and 2, over 6 hours of content. On each one, both are two DVD sets, matches, interviews, and extras. Joe Dombrowski and I do the voiceover. Joe does the play-by-play. I'd get more of the behind-the-scenes and the historical comments on the this is our development. This is a WWE developmental that I had in Cincinnati. And believe me, you're going to see a lot of the stars of today that were the stars of tomorrow on this. I think you really enjoy it. And you can get those at joe-dombrowski.com or prowrestlinglibrary.com. And you can also pick up the Brian Pillman Show's Anthology, the 20th anniversary. It's a four DVD set, over 15 hours of content, all four of those shows from 98, 99, 2000, 2001. Matches, interviews, awards, and so many extras. And on that, also, for those who don't know, it's the only place that you can see WCW, WWF, and ECW talent under the same roof on the same night. Now, they don't wrestle each other, but there's a lot of great stars on all these shows. So check them out. If you like, you can get those at PillmanShows.com or the two addresses I mentioned earlier, Joe-Dombrowski.com or ProWrestlingLibrary.com. And also on that PillmanShows.com, if you click on Info or About, you'll see my name on there, and he's Joe is webmaster building some historical stuff for me, pictures of the magazine covers that I designed, some wrestling photographs and stuff like that. It's incomplete right now, but it's there. But, yeah, those DVDs, I think, if you're a real wrestling fan, you'll enjoy each and every one of them. So, now,
oh well,
we can get on with it.
With Saraya and her debut here in AEW, she immediately becomes, well, one of, if not the biggest name in the women's division, thanks to her history in WWE. So tons of questions, I think, here. You know, obviously the first question is, can she wrestle? She's broached the idea of occasional matches in an interview over the course of this week, you know, for big, important situations. So it sounds like she would not rule that out. And I would think if you paid whatever Tony paid for her, which was probably not a small amount, that you would be hoping at some point that she would get in the ring. So you want to make sure that you make the most of it and it's really high profile. I have concerns, however, regarding due diligence here with respect to her health. And hopefully Tony has done everything he needs to do to, you know, be comfortable with the decision that he's made here. But I think it's logical to look at this and scratch your head a little bit. I mean, we've been watching Paul Levesque in WWE bring back name after name for surprise after surprise. Saraya is one of his kids from NXT in Orlando. And then, well, she predates the actual Performance Center, I believe, but she was down there when he was doing his thing and getting that women's division together. So the idea that he did not reach out to her or maybe decided to pass if he had heard about it and considered it is concerning to me, because outside of Saraya and her family herself, there's probably nobody on planet Earth more familiar with her medical situation than Paul Levesque. And for whatever reason, she didn't make it back to WWE. Here she is at AEW Grand Slam this past Wednesday. So, you know, that concerns me, Les. And I suppose we'll have all our questions answered in due time. But, you know, those things did cross my mind when I saw her on TV this Wednesday.
Sure. Well, you know, we have talked about that, especially on this company. They'll put a new face out there and tell you zip about them. And you and I will sit saying, why are they there? What are they going to do? I don't know who that person is. Can you give me some background? Okay, she came out. I'll be honest with you. I didn't recognize her at first. But anyway, then I realized who it was. But why, you know, this whole segment was a question mark to me from the time she walked out there. She got in the ring and everybody, all the participants got out. And then more girls came down from the back and they all stood around the outside with their mouths hanging open like she's God, or, you know, is she naked, or, you know what I mean? And she waved a few people. I thought, oh, okay, she's running for mayor or something. Did you hear anybody say any reason that she was there or why she was there or what she's going to do or why she came out there and stood in the ring and everybody else got out and stood and looked at her?
No, you were left to your own devices to try and book your own adventure for next week, I think.
Yes, and that doesn't make any sense. You know, at least tell your commentators to say, well, Saraya's here. We're not sure. We didn't expect her. It's a surprise to us, too. Well, you know what? Let's try to get an interview with her and see what her plans are. Maybe we can do that for next week. Or catch her on her way leaving the ring. Do something that is not formatted, normally, into your system. Make sense?
Perfect sense. I like the idea of let's see if we can catch up with her in time to find out what her plans are next week. That way you still get the thing of her being there without saying much, but you promise a little more exposition.
Right, exactly. So, and like I say, I'm sitting there and my friend Jim's sitting there with me and we're watching it, looking at each other, looking at the TV. Why is she there? I don't know. Do you? No. They're going to tell us? No, they're not going to do that either. Why are all these other women standing around outside with their mouths like she's 7 feet tall? Or, you know, I mean, I'm sure there was an idea there somewhere, but it didn't work. I'd be curious whether she's going to be able to wrestle or not myself.
Perhaps, and maybe this is just because of the way Britt Baker has been, for lack of a better term, the central character in the women's division for, you know, the short tenure of AEW. But, you know, it was just me. You know, like I said, you were left to your own devices. I wondered if this meant something is coming with Saraya and Britt Baker, which, again, that's what really got me thinking about the health thing, because obviously she's made some appearances in WWE, but it was more about making announcements or pronouncements or just stopping by or being the catalyst for two other people to get into something. So the idea that she broached occasional matches and she walked in on something that was happening with arguably the biggest star in the division just got my mind going in that direction.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's it. And plus the new champion.
Yeah.
Right? So should she have maybe come out and congratulated the new champion? And, you know, and then, and if anything else, just turn around and walk out. But for her to stand in the ring, and you know, like she's acknowledging fans, you can't see who she's actually, I'm guessing she's waving to one of the girls at ringside or a fan. But nobody's given us anything to fill that, verbally, to fill that segment from that the point that she gets there forward. Makes sense?
Does make sense, yeah. So let me ask you about what makes sense with respect to the Ring of Honor World Championship match we had that actually opened the show with Chris Jericho as Ring of Honor champion. Now, in terms of what that means, you know, we basically talked about this much last week. I'm not one way or the other on it. The jury's out. Because if Jericho and a star of his magnitude is the Ring of Honor champion, if it means that Ring of Honor is getting or has already gotten a TV deal with Discovery and Tony's been able to expand the empire here, then I think having a guy with Jericho's name value as the Ring of Honor champion is a really good thing. If it's just to say that he's won every belt imaginable, could anybody possibly care besides Jericho on a show where it's just another belt with a million belts already on the show?
Yeah, it really does. And like you say, if it's just to be sure, you say Chris Jericho's won every belt. Belts have become so meaningless in current times. This guy's won this 16, this guy's won this one 12 times, this guy's won that one 19 times, this one, how many times has Mockley been their champion already? Three?
Yes.
I think. Yeah, three times. Realize how long it took Lou Thesz to be champion twice.
Years.
Yeah, yeah. And yes, I know the world moves a little faster, but hardly at the speed of light. And that's what this is kind of doing too. No, I don't think, I said last week, I figured that's where they were going. I didn't want, and it's not anything against Chris, but here's the other thing too, and I mentioned these before we started recording. Go back and tell me how many wrestlers that were transition world champions were pushed to that level a second time.
That's pretty difficult. Very difficult.
Yeah. None that I can remember. I'm not saying it never happened, but I can go as far back as Tommy Rich. And Tommy never achieved that title a second time. And I'll be quite honest with you. I've said this to Tommy. We've had this conversation years ago. I would have never put the belt on him for that short period of time because he was so over with young girls and mothers and grandmothers. And I'm not saying that to be funny. He really was. You know, he'd get hurt and they'd cry. But realize you put it on him, he's reached the top of the mountain, so your support has gotten him there. But now your support will keep him there. No, it won't. A week later, he's not the champion any longer. It's not that you don't like him, but it's like the surprise is over, you know, or you've opened a Christmas gift, now what do we do? So, yeah, I don't see the value in that. I truly don't. And with Claudio is a damn solid wrestler. And they mentioned he'd never held that title. And he was a fresh face, and you could have left that belt on him. Chris is, what, the demo god, the magician, the maestro, the lion tamer. Am I missing any names?
There's got to be a few more. Kind of like Apollo Creed and Rocky when they started introducing him and he had about 17 nicknames.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, I don't know if the website has an open vote for a wrestler with most catchphrases, names in a year. He's got to win that hands down. But the point is, it's not. You know, it wasn't necessary. And here are two guys who I feel certain could have got Claudio's hand raised without hurting either one, you know, without hurting Jericho. So anyway, that's the reason I would have left the title on Claudio. Not that Chris Jericho is not worth it. He obviously his track record speaks for itself as well. But I don't think him having a title right now is the most important thing in the world because he is Chris Jericho.
Now, as a match, I know you had a few thoughts on this as well.
Yeah, the match was okay. It wasn't bad. They gave us a couple faults. Legitimately faults where you thought, okay, it's over. No, it's not, you know, here and there. But here, now, we talked about, I mentioned consistencies or inconsistencies, okay? Jericho manhandled Kerry Silkin. For those who don't know, Kerry is the former owner of Ring of Honor and hell of a nice guy. He really is. Kerry is a good guy. I like Kerry. Chris manhandled Kerry and threw him into Claudio, okay? And God love him, Kerry took a hellacious bump for that. He didn't really need to, but he did. My point is, later on in the show, MJF drops Schiavone. And then we find out that MJF has been fined. Now, as a promoter, a former promoter myself, it would be far more important to me to fine or do something to a guy who manhandled a fan who wasn't on my payroll to prevent lawsuits. So if you fine MJF, then the fine should have been, you should have fined Jericho as well. Again, it's inconsistency. Somebody else is catching it besides me. And to me, those are part of key. Well, you know, I mentioned Law and Order SVU. If you get terribly inconsistent there, the fans are going to fade away, right? They're going to catch it as well. Those are the people who are into that show that much. So, consistency in a storyline, if you're reading a book or watching a movie, is important, and it should be just as important in professional wrestling on television, and it's not. So yes, there, Tony should be paying attention to that as well. If you find a one guy, then the other guy needs to be fined, probably more so because Kerry is not on your payroll. He's not a part of your company. Make sense?
Well, perfect sense, and he's an invited guest on top of that. Not even a fan who paid his money to be here. He's a guy you invited.
Hey, I just knocked your invited guest down. How's
that? Yeah, exactly.
What? Are you out of your mind? No, And listen here, what I'm saying, these are things that I grew up learning in this business. Consistencies. If you want the people to believe you, give them, make sure that you give them enough so there is something for them to grasp in terms of believability. And I think one of the problems, and this is not so, this is with young wrestlers, but obviously with young promoters too, who you don't understand that. And you have this subconscious view of it's all a work. It's everybody's smart, so we can do anything we want. But if the writers of SVU took the same stance, then they wouldn't have been on for 22 years. That we can almost guarantee you.
Moving right along. Yes, that brings us to the tag team title match between Swerve in Our Glory and the Acclaimed. Now, I am going to take some air out of this balloon here in a second, but first let's talk about what a nice moment it was for these guys. In their backyard, big house, I can only imagine, especially winning the World Tag Team titles on TV with over 1 million people watching in your hometown. You know, there probably hasn't been a moment in the last few days where they haven't closed their eyes and replayed every single second of that match and the celebration and what it felt like to get their hands raised and their hometown people cheering for them when they win those tag team titles. That's awesome. Those guys are over. Way more over, obviously, in your hometown because you should be. But they're definitely a really, really popular group who's gaining a lot of momentum. No doubt about that. And yes, I did say I was going to pull the pin on this thing, and I will in a second. But before I get to that, Les, let me ask you to go back into the mental Rolodex a little bit. Do you remember the very first championship you won and what you thought of it, how you felt about it? Did you take the belt everywhere with you after that?
I didn't sleep with it on.
No?
No. I didn't. Yeah, sure. You know, yeah, it's realize we're all smart enough in the work in the business to realize it's not real. Okay. But when you're given a championship, it's the promoter or the booker or a combination of those people saying, we trust you to add value to this and to help us elevate it. So yes, it's a compliment, you know, it's like a bonus, only it's not financial. But, you know, back in our day, it could be obviously because the higher on the card, the bigger percentage your cut of the gate was. But, yeah, I see that completely, you know. And as you said, these guys have, you know, do I think they're a great tag team? I think they're entertaining. I told you before we started recording, if I was a booker, I'd say, you scream at the top of your lungs like that, I'm firing your ass. I mean, that to me, that I don't even get that. I'm sorry. Yes, I'm old, and thank God that I am, because I can't even understand why that is entertaining to them or the people that think it's cool. But here again, inconsistencies. How many top teams have the Acclaim beaten that you remember?
I can't think of any top teams that they've beaten. In fact, now that we're on this subject, I'm sitting here scrolling the AEW website again to see if I can find their records.
But that's the first thing. It's not, well, you know, Jim's, my friend Jim said, these fans, how these guys can't, they're over here, but they're not over every place else. I said, yeah, they're home. You know, they obviously are from the area. And which they are, obviously. But yeah, the switch here, I've always, you know, I don't think Keith Lee has approached the value here that I've saw with him in NXT, or this, I'm not that high on that particular team, but again, Acclaim. I don't, you know, I just don't get the reason that they, first of all, earned a title match, and second of all, them being the champions. And yes, it's a great honor and thrill for them, I'm sure, you know, because they are young guys and just, you know, just starting to build their resume. But I just didn't quite understand why. Especially when you've got this mediocre team called FDR. who don't have enough waste to put all their damn belts around.
Well, if we're going by records, I think I might actually have an explanation for the Acclaimed, believe it or not. I did not expect to see this, but they had a much bigger or better record than I anticipated this year. As a team, the Acclaimed are 10 up and 3 down. By comparison, FTR is 5-1-1 in All Elite Wrestling competition this year. So let's take a look at that, because that's also something that factors in when you talk about how wins and losses mean something, especially in this arena where you can manipulate things in the direction you want them. Seems to me that you know, it's been a recurring theme in FTR's run that they get a very limited amount of work, almost like someone's afraid that if you see them too much, it'd be kind of like what I was talking about with Brian Danielson. Why don't they have everything? How is FTR now, Matt? Obviously, they've won in Ring of Honor because they're the Ring of Honor Tag Team Champions. They won in AAA, the AAA Tag Team Champions. But how is it that the Acclaim this year has had at least 13 matches as a team and FTR has had 7 when they're arguably your most talented team?
And Dax has dropped 3 straight singles matches.
He is 1-5 as a singles wrestler.
Jesus. Wins and losses are going to mean a lot in this company. I can see it coming. Yeah, just not in my lifetime. Thank you.
And the one win was against Cash.
Wow. And I'm not averse to guys, teammates wrestling one another. And that match was a damn good match, and it made sense. But yeah, this makes no sense. And again, I'm not trying to take anything away from the Acclaimed. Somebody mentioned it. Which one of them is gay?
Anthony Bowens.
Okay. They said the first time an openly gay man has won a title in recent times. I don't know. I don't keep track of those things.
Yeah, it was. He talked about it earlier this week. It was a career goal for him, among other things, to be able to represent that way. And so I'm happy for him. Congratulations, too. He's working on some other stuff. He had a nice interview this week with our mutual friend, Fred Ricciani, over at the Sports Courier. So if anybody has not had a chance to see Fred's conversation with Anthony Bowens, it's on YouTube.
Did he do it without screaming at the top of his lungs?
Well, not quite at the top of his lungs. You're right. Yeah, not that loud.
But, you know, since we're on inconsistencies, and FTR's name has come up, for those of you who don't remember FDR, let us tell you they're probably the, they are there's no problems about it here. They are the top tag team in the business today that's still lacing their boots up and still wear boots, by the way. They were doing an interview following this or within that same, around that same segment. And then these two kids who have, I don't know if they've even won a damn match yet, the Guns.
I'm sure they've won on the internet.
Oh, okay, well, good. That's the important, or on, the, on Dark. Come out and start throwing down on these guys. Well, when it was over, Jim said, damn, could they, did they miss anything by tearing these guys down? And if that's where they're going, why? How do the Guns, how do they jump from doing jobs to getting a title shot? Because they're verbally abusive or what exactly? Inconsistencies. Thank you very much.
Well, I'm trying to look for the silver lining here because these two teams wrestled, I don't know, a couple of months ago, and they had a very good match, and it was wonderful for those young fellas, the Guns, to have the opportunity to get in there with FTR. And if it means that those kids are going to take another couple of steps forward, having an opportunity to get into the ring with FTR, hopefully more than once over the next few weeks, then I guess it's a net positive. And I would also think that means that we have not yet seen the next challengers for the Acclaimed if FTR is going to be temporarily sidetracked. So continuing to look for that silver lining, at least FTR stated their intentions to go after the AEW championship. So hopefully we will circle back around to that eventually.
Yeah. Oh, and I wanted to back up to the Acclaimed match. One of the highlights for me was seeing Billy Gunn wearing his Yellowstone baseball cap backwards, like in the commercials for the Yellowstone. Hey, I'm a big Yellowstone fan, man. I said to Jim, he's got a Yellowstone cap on. Jim looked at me like, what?
Yeah, he got over with you on that.
He did. And I thought, this guy who is old enough to be the father and maybe grandfather of some of these kids is in better shape than any of them, for Christ's sake.
So
web that we weave.
We will not spoil it for you, but there are some more matches of interest on Rampage, which, as we record this, airs tonight. Sting and Darby Allin versus Brody King.
Oh, wait a minute. We've got one match we didn't cover.
Do you want to cover that match?
I'm going to say what you typed up.
Go ahead.
No one cares about Pac and Cassidy. Moving on. The only thing I'm going to say is Jim and I sat and weeped and drove each other crazy and couldn't decide whether to turn the TV off or not. When you look at Pac and the physique on him, and he bleeds intensity. I mean, he can stand still and not even move, and he's intense. To have to carry the Clown Prince of Wrestling, it's insane. It does nothing for Pac, and it actually does nothing for Cassidy because he is who he is, and that's who he's going to be.
So,
or should be.
Let me ask you this about Pac, though. I mean, he's also suffering this stuff. It's not like he's said, I'm not doing it. And, you know, I don't know how much anyone feels like they can do that in 2022. But sometimes I look at some of the things they have him do, as you talked about, the intensity. And, you know, he looks like, and he does bring it every single time. You know, what is his level of responsibility in terms of, you know what, this doesn't work for me?
Well, you know what? You can say, I'm making all this money and I can't make it elsewhere. You can take that stance. Or you can, you know, I don't know how much input he has or any of, you know, anybody for that matter. But you can say, you know what? I don't know, you know. And again, I don't know if he knows what their plans are for him past this past Wednesday. Again, there are so many guys on this roster. Half these guys disappear for periods of time. And when they come back, oh, I forgot he was a member of this roster, you know? I mean, sometimes. So, it's just, here again, somebody said, why do I pick on poor Orange Cassidy? I don't know poor Orange Cassidy. And I'm not saying, I don't know if he's a nice guy or he's the SOB of the world. I don't know that. It's not personal. I am not a big proponent of clowns in my wrestling rings. That's all. And you see you've seen one of his matches, you've seen all of his matches. Can he work? Apparently he can. And if he wants to be a worker, then get the hell out of that stupid costume, put some size on, and, you know, dress like a wrestler, for Christ's sake. But if it's just about him being entertaining, then let him be entertaining with some of the guys who are doing jobs on, you know, Dark. That's all. You know, it's not personal. Like I said last week about the Jacksons, it's not personal. I don't know him. But you don't take a guy like Pac and have him carry this guy and sell a lot of stuff for him, because if you look at the two physique-wise, Pac should have ate his lunch in about 2 minutes and gone home. I'm going to mention that this was, I don't know if it was on Twitter or on Facebook this earlier this week, but a fan had put up a clip of Magnum TA against a lower card guy on, I'm guessing, Atlanta TV or one of the TVs, I'm not sure. That doesn't matter. But the copy with the video clip was that if this match were on AEW, it would have taken up gone through two commercials, and Magnum would have had to made this guy look like he could barely beat him, and yet this match lasted probably 2 or 3 minutes, which is the person putting it up, their point is well taken. You know, again, and I won't say that Tony Khan won't put a belt on Cassidy, at which point we won't talk about that on here because I don't want to swear that much on this show. I won't cut my wrist, but it may get close to that. Because you just, never mind. The major guys who can do what Pac can do need to be against other guys of the same magnitude or consistency. And this makes no sense. Well, you know, let's go back to Wardlow. He beat 20 security guards faster than he could beat Cassidy.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing. Quit knocking the poor. If you're going to, if the security guards are just to beat up, then forget it, okay? Like WWE, let some of the producers run out and break it up. They're ex-wrestlers, right? So maybe they won't get their asses handed to them. But yeah. But I agree. No one cares about Pac and Cassidy. You care about Pac, but the other, whatever. So moving on. But I had to say it. I had to get it out of my craw.
All right. So getting back to what you can expect to see on Rampage tonight, Sting and Darby Allin against Brody King and Buddy Matthews. There's also the team of Samoa Joe and Wardlow with Tony Nese and Josh Woods. Oh, the other thing I wanted to make sure I mentioned, because obviously there was a thing with Eddie Kingston being suspended and missing out on the opportunity to wrestle Sammy Guevara at the last pay-per-view. They are going to do that match this week on Rampage. And you also have Ricky Starks and Powerhouse Hobbs going at it again in a match that presumably will take more than 4 minutes.
Presumably and hopefully.
Yeah.
Yes. And of course, for those of you who care, you can see Action Bronson on that tonight too.
That's right, with Hook.
I think we should have a battle royal with him and Danhausen and Cassidy and I don't know whoever else. Super Mario and Bambi. I don't know. But anyway.
Last item of business today on Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. I cannot go this entire hour without at least mentioning WWE. After all, they are the biggest wrestling company in the world. So I do want to touch upon this and then we'll wrap this show. These two items, I feel at least, are a little bit related. And it could be a generational thing for me because this match is near and dear to my heart, seeing it for the first time as a kid. So Paul Levesque was speaking the other day in an interview where he talked about the fact that he does not believe intentional use of blood is necessary in this era of wrestling. He said the world has changed. The world has evolved. I don't think it's necessary. Now, obviously, things happen. And if something happens in the match where someone gets cut, you know, you'll see them roll out and they'll get looked at to make sure it's nothing dangerous and the match will continue. But he went on to say, quote, "I'm just of the opinion right now, given the state of the world and the pandemic, at the end of the day, what we do is dangerous enough without intentionally making it more dangerous. Yes, we did feature the use of blood for a long period of time, but we've changed that practice and it's irresponsible to go back." Now, obviously, as someone who is old school, I want your thoughts on that. But the reason I say these two items are related is because part of the interview he was doing was to talk about Survivor Series. And this year, Survivor Series is going to feature not one, but two War Games matches. Now, I think to his credit, he talked about how Survivor Series the last few years have been Raw versus SmackDown. And he said he was not going to do that this year. We're going to get to these War Games matches, believe it or not, by actually having angles and programs that lead these people into this cage together, thank God. One men's War Games match and one women's War Games match for Survivor Series, which is going to be at the TD Garden in Boston. And so part of the reason I put these two things together, Les, is because, again, I mentioned it was a generational thing. You know, I was a kid jumping up and down watching those initial War Games matches, this invention of Dusty Rhodes. And even though they have done them quite successfully in NXT the last few years, it still is something for me, at least, to think where I think to myself, you've got this concept, and the idea that there's no blood in these matches just kind of waters down the concept to me. Whether that's acceptable in 2022 or not, that's honestly how I feel.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I think a cage match which War Games is in essence is a cage match. Yeah, I've said before, I see a value in blood occasionally. Yes, AEW, like virtually everything else, has been overdone. Sometimes not by on purpose either. Britt bled by accident the other. In fact, I see a lot of accidental blood on that company. Maybe they should learn to work a little better. I don't know. But yeah, I see the, again, I don't think blood should be every week. I don't think you see it a lot, but occasionally I think it makes a statement that this is a more brutal match or a match of a whole other level, you know, than you've seen before. So yeah, and especially the War Games, I think, because if you look at any of the historical War Games, there's blood. But I don't think it should be every week, or you know, or it doesn't have to be, you know, consistent. But yes, I still see some value. War Games should be good, I think. And he's mentioned in stories and stuff to build to those. If you stop and think about how they started in WCW and how the two factions came together. You know, they, you know, there, that was a story too. So, that's the type of thing I love, you know, give, it's, you know, like any good movie drama, any good television drama, any good book, dramatic book that you've read, you know, detective stories or murder mysteries or anything. The story is what drives you to keep reading or keep watching. And we blow that in this business so often now in current. I mean, not that we didn't blow it at times, you know, in years past we did, but it's more current now. And we were talking about the inconsistencies in Wednesday's show. And believe me, this was something that I noticed even before I got, I mean, maybe not the same way I noticed it being smart to the business, but I noticed it. And I'm sure there are other fans that notice it and maybe roll their eyes or maybe, you know, is it deters their excitement about that particular situation or match, you know. So to me, details are the most important thing. And the bottom line, and no matter which company we're talking about, a lot of details are overlooked and moved past it. And it's glaring, believe it or not.
So I'm looking at this announcement, thinking about these War Games matches and trying to mentally picture who you'd put in there right now, because Paul Levesque was very, very adamant mentioning that, you know, this is not going to be just Raw versus SmackDown. We're going to be doing stories that are going to get people into these matches and, you know, figure out a way to make this make sense. And obviously there's still some time. It's only September, right? But November 26th will be here before you know it. It's obviously the first time they've done a War Games match and two War Games matches on the main roster. So there's a little bit of specialness and an added aura to that. At the moment, at least, I can only think of two people who probably should be in the War Games match on opposite sides. And they're actually going to be in a different kind of cage match here in the next week or two. And I'm talking about Rollins and Riddle.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah, it's, I'm wondering if the bloodline will end up being one team on War Games.
That would make some sense, yeah.
Yeah, because Soho got relieved of his championship belt in NXT because he's moving to SmackDown on a permanent basis, I guess. You know, real quick, and we won't go, I'm not going to need to deal with it, but NXT, the one thing I noticed that Hunter's doing there is still sticking some fresh guys out there I haven't had a chance to look at in the past who are coming off of, what's the other show, the one Nigel's on now? Damn it, I can't think of the name. Anyway.
Was it Level Up?
Yeah, Level Up, yeah. And out of the PC. It's just some of those names they're giving these guys, I can't, if it's their real name or I can't pronounce the names they're giving them, I don't know which, but he's throwing some new faces. And I saw some guys that I see some, you know, I think some potential. I'm not going to make any statements until I've seen them a couple of weeks and learn to pronounce their names properly. But Wendy Chu's still there. She's not as sleepy as she has been, though.
No, and she's not wearing the full suited pajamas now anymore either.
No. And toxic waste, I mean toxic attraction is a waste.
Wow. Wow. Okay.
I'm just not, I don't get it. I'll tell you a little, Ivy Nile. She started with Dr. Tom when I first moved here. She was training with Tom, and I got to know her. And she's a tough little son of a gun. She was she won the women's thing on the first year that Rock had that competition that he does. And she's tough, and I'm glad to see her do well. It's a shame she doesn't have a little more size, but she's a hell of an athlete in terms of you know, her weight training, her in-ring. I mean, I watched her at you know, here at Docs, and hell, she had more a better work ethic than a huge percentage of the guys, for sure. But anyway, yeah, there's some good people there, and I'm sure they'll move up in time. But I guess we've pretty much overstayed our welcome, or what?
Well, I think we've covered everything we came to cover, so now would be a good time to let folks know where they can get their hands on the act. Well, not their hands, because you're retired. You're not going to be getting back in the ring and doing any last matches.
No, I'm not.
But you get the opportunity to pick your brain. How about that? Get the...
All right. Yeah. Or I would get back in the ring if got steps.
Oh, that's true. You will get in the ring and demonstrate a thing.
You know what? Yeah. There you go. Yes. Yeah. If you'd like to get a hold of me for a training seminar or a weekend training camp, I'd be more than happy to get with you on that. You can reach me, lesthatcher28@gmail.com. Be more than happy to send you the information on what I do at these things, the cost, et cetera, et cetera. And I will promise you that it's hands-on, and I feel very certain that if I spend a weekend with a crew at your place, they will come away with some added tools to help improve their game and hopefully improve your audience and your promotion.
All right, brother. I think we're going to wrap this one up.
All right. Well, I hope we did some damage and give all the 10 and 12-year-olds something to pick us apart about on their computers. I mean that to be funny.
Well, then let's get out of here before you start any more trouble. For the legend, Les Thatcher,
<All right. laughs>
my name is Victor Sosa. Thank you so much for taking time out of your weekend to spend some of it here with us. And we look forward to bringing you another edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly next week.